We arrive here today to debate at social distances from each other.
There's no doubt that the old politics of the two-party system is now gone and over.
I don't need lectures from you or anybody on the Sinn Féin side of the house.
We're very reluctant to kind of say what's red lines, but we do have to take climate seriously.
There's going to be constant criticism. There's going to be a lot of disappointment, and whoever goes into government is going to be unpopular.
Okay. Hello, this is David Murphy, and you're very welcome to the Your Politics podcast budget special. I'm joined in studio by Micheál Lehane and Sandra Hurley. How are you both?
Good. All good, yeah.
Great. And we're joined on the line by Will Goodbody, who's in the bowels of RTE. How are you, Will?
I'm well, thanks, David. How are you?
Okay, great. Now, people are asking who benefits from today's budget. And I think really if you're a craft cider drinking gamer who drives an electric car and works from home, this is probably the budget for you, Will. What do you think?
I think you could be right, David. Yeah, I mean, I suppose the Taoiseach had said in advance of this, it wasn't going to be one for everyone in the audience or that kind of a thing. But there seems to be a lot of little stuff there for a lot of different people. There are a few kind of specific areas that seem to have done reasonably well out of it, and then other areas that have lost out completely. So, maybe we can go through some of those now.
Yeah, it's just talk to us a little bit about the kind of areas that have actually benefited, but nobody's got an enormous benefit from this, have they?
No, well, I suppose, I mean, one headline grabber out of all of this probably will be the remote working area. I mean, obviously, we've all had to learn how to work remotely during the pandemic. It's something that's been new and quite alien to many of us. But up until now, there were fairly few sort of incentives there from a tax point of view to ease the burden of working from home and the extra cost that might incur. So the government has addressed that, as it flagged well in advance of the budget, in today's budget. And basically what it has said it will do is that it's going to introduce a tax relief amounting to 30% of the cost of vouched expenses for heat, electricity and broadband in respect of those when they're incurred while working from home. And that's going to be put through the finance bill. And, you know, this is, I suppose, in line with its policy of trying to have more and more people working remotely or blended working into the future. Now, on the face of it, that looks like it's a reasonably generous offering. But actually, when you drill down into it, it's perhaps not worth as much as you might think. Taxback.com is estimating that for a worker who works at home for 240 days a year, which is full time, essentially, with average bills, if they're on the higher rate of income tax, the relief would be worth about €205 a year to them, or €102 on the lower rate of tax. But compared to the relief that's already in place, that's really only an increase of €52 or up to €105, depending on which rate you're on. So not a massive amount there. So that's one area, I suppose, people might have thought they've gained in, but actually when you look at it, it's not as impressive as you might think.
Sandra, one area you've been looking at is the question of the land hoarding tax. It's a new thing. Can you just tell us exactly what's involved?
Yes, so they've introduced this new zoned land tax, they're calling it. So there's going to be a levy of 3% on undeveloped land that's already been zoned. And they see it as a sort of an activation measure to kind of push people to go and get planning permission and to develop their land. And Leo Varadkar was asked about it earlier, and you know, he's always a good man for the sound bites, as we know. He said there was a clear message from this. He said, "We're going to come and hit you with a tax, and that tax will significantly erode your profit margins." So there's a lot of interest in this, but the opposition have been very quick to point out that there's a 2 to 3 year lead-in time. Also, as a levy, it's coming in at 3% versus the derelict site tax, which was 7%. So it's a lot lower. Government ministers have been defending that. Leo Varadkar said, you know, you need a lead-in time. You need to give people warning. It's going to take legislation. They have to map areas. But I thought Dara O'Brien made an interesting point at his press conference just a little bit later, or a little bit earlier. He said that the vacant site levy has only brought in €21,000. So it simply hasn't worked. And he had initially, I think he said million, and then he had to go back and say thousand. So it's only brought in a tiny amount. So it simply hasn't worked. So this is the next one that they're introducing. Problem, of course, is that it's a few years down the line. The hope in government is that it changes behaviour.
Micheál, one of the interesting things is that the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, has said on a number of occasions that the biggest challenge facing government, its number one priority, is housing. And there wasn't an awful lot new on housing in this budget.
No, but I suppose you did have the Housing for All plan just a few weeks ago, and you can see the long 4 to 5 year term plan there in relation to housing. And this budget isn't really going to define or be the test of the government when it comes to housing. And it does seem like generally this budget was about just getting through it. Yes, there's a lot of endeavour and there's a lot of small items and a sprinkling of the extra money in the budget to a wide group of people. And I just met one senior government TD coming down here in the last while. He said no mistakes were made. That seems to have been the aim, really, to get through it and not to make mistakes. And the feeling and the phones haven't been ringing in the TD's offices here at Leinster House in the aftermath of the budget speeches is that they may just have got through it.
Sandra, another interesting element was the changes that the government have introduced in relation to childcare. Can you talk us through those changes and exactly what they might mean?
They've tried to do a lot on childcare, and the problem, again, I think that people might find with it is that it's targeted in a few different ways. So some parents might feel they're not getting a lot. So firstly, they've changed the eligibility on the universal subsidy under the National Childcare Scheme. So now it applies for children older than three, all the way up to age 15. Previously, it was capped at the age of three. And that comes in at parents get 50 cent per hour up to 45 hours a week. And that's not means tested. They're also going to change some of the issues around the means tested part of that subsidy. There had been a lot of criticism that was disadvantaging some families. And then the other side of it is they're giving a lot of money to creche providers to attract staff, retain staff, and that's not going to parents. What they've got in return, they're saying, is that creches have to say, we guarantee that we're going to freeze fees, we're not going to increase them, but we're going to improve pay and conditions. But it's hard to see all that working out.
So how does that actually work? Because normally, if a private company is doing its thing, it can charge whatever it likes. That's the way the market normally works. So it's very unusual for a government to say, these companies over here, they can only charge these fees. And look at the controversy they've landed themselves in over the question of whether or not to freeze rents.
Yeah, it is curious. And I don't know how exactly they're getting that guarantee. The Department of Children has been stressing that this is all about in return for. They have to promise to freeze those fees and they have to promise to improve pay and conditions. And this is something that, you know, people in childcare had really looked for. I think the childcare sector are kind of happy with that. From talking to some government TDs, I'm getting the impression they feel it might be a hard sell to parents. Parents want to hear that fees are coming down, not that they're going to get a little bit of help, but generally that fees will be frozen. So they've tried to do a lot. And I think the promise again from government is we're going to do more in years to come. But people want immediate changes, not the promise of something down the line.
And again, that's one of those measures that's well into next year, isn't it?
Yes, September 2022 for the universal subsidy change. So good bit into the year.
And generally, though, this budget has seen some measures take effect from tonight, the five euro increase in the fuel allowance, and also January for the welfare allowance that had been March under previous government. So you can see an awareness that there has to be something done to address the rising cost of living more swiftly than would have been the case in previous years.
Will, I know you're going to rush off and interview some business types for the news later on, but just before you do, wanted to ask you about two particular points. One is the fact that there are changes coming down the track in terms of the employment wage subsidy scheme. And the other is the fact that the 9% rate of VAT for hospitality is being withdrawn in August. Now, we knew about these things. They were set up during the pandemic, but all those changes are going to take place. Can you talk us through a little bit about what all that means?
Yeah, well, I suppose turning to the EWIS, as it's snappily known these days, the Unemployment Wage Subsidy Scheme. I mean, it's really been a lifesaver for so many businesses throughout the pandemic. So far, the government has paid out around 5 billion euro. It's supporting around 51,000 employers, and within those, 668,000 employees across the 18 months have been supported by it. Currently, there's about 308,000 employees being supported through it. And the big question was when and how it was going to end. I mean, employers have been appealing that there wouldn't be a cliff edge, that it would come to some kind of graduated end when it did eventually have to be wound down, and everybody accepted it would have to be wound down. So today we got a bit of certainty around that, and what the government has said is that it'll remain in place in a graduated form until the 30th of April of next year, and it made the point that that's 6 months after the lifting of most public health restrictions and 2 months after the pandemic unemployment payment ceases. But in the course of, or the interim period between now and then, it will be sort of wound down on a gradual basis, so no changes for the months of October and November, and then across December, January and February, a two-rate structure will apply, so there'll be two two different rates, lower than the current higher two rates. Sorry, there are four rates in total at the moment, and the new rate structure will be the kind of closer to the lower two rates. And then through March and April, which are the final 2 months of the scheme, there'll be a flat rate subsidy of €100 put in place. And then the scheme will close to new employers from the 1st of January. So that does give employers something to plan by. And it has been welcomed that it has been extended, although I think some in the hospitality and tourism sectors where, you know, things might take a little bit longer to get back on their feet again, they were hoping that it perhaps might have lasted a little bit longer, maybe into the early part of the summer, but that's not going to be the case. And then turning to the VAT hospitality rate, the lower rate of 9%, it was introduced last year in the budget when the rate was cut from 13.5% down to 9% for those tourism and hospitality sectors. It actually covered quite a lot of different areas of business, food and drink sales in restaurants and hotels and cafes and hotel and guest house accommodation, letting of houses, apartments, etc. on a short-term basis, even caravan park lettings and admission to cinemas and theatres and that kind of thing. So really quite a lot of different sectors covered by it. It's impacted, you know, a lot of businesses along the way, and was supposed to be in place until December of this year, the end of December. But in June, as part of the economic recovery plan, the government said it would extend it further until the end of August of next year. And that was really a recognition that, given that, you know, the pace of reopening had been a lot slower than many people had hoped at that point, and it made sense to give a bit of extra help to the sectors that were continuing to struggle. Inevitably, in the run-up to the budget, the lobby groups for those sectors were pushing hard for it to be pushed out again, to give them more certainty and predictability when it came to pricing, particularly for incoming visitors who might be booking trips a long time in advance and that kind of thing. But today they got the certainty, but not the certainty they were looking for, with the Minister for Finance announcing that the reduced rate will remain in place until the end of August of next year. But in other words, it won't be extended beyond that. And there has been really quite a very negative reaction to that. I think of all the measures announced around business today, it's probably gone down the worst, with the Restaurants Association of Ireland, for example, calling it a disastrous move, and the Irish Tourism Industry Confederation saying it would lead to a slower recovery of that sector.
Okay, Will, thanks very much for joining us. We're going to let you rush off and do your other work. Micheál Hann.
Is there any bit of crack? No.
We're going to have some crack. We're going to have some crack. We're going to have some
business podcast.
Yeah, well, listen, you know, it is budget day, but I'm going to ask you, Micheál, which party in government has won in this budget?
Well, the Greens certainly think they've won. I think all sides, though, think they've won, and that there's something on each side, enough there for each party, that the other one can look the other way if they feel any way uncomfortable about it. I think, again, like the National Development Plan, there's enough deft political handling around this. Equally, though, when it comes to public reaction, when it comes to what budgets were, I don't know if it's good or bad, but this is extremely low-key, the atmosphere around here, despite a giddiness in the early part of the day because there hadn't been a budget here last year in Leinster House. That dissipated fairly quickly. People left the Dáil chamber with an even greater degree of speed than they would normally after the budget speeches. Indeed, when Roisin Chortall stood up to speak, there was no senior minister there. There's something a bit off about everything. It could be the post-pandemic. It could be the fact that this was never going to be a hugely radical budget. It wasn't able to be that. For all those reasons, though, it's just not like the old days around here.
One interesting thing, though, just in relation to the Greens, and is that if you look at this budget, what they've done is they've got the carbon tax and it's going to raise €400 million next year. And then in future years, it's actually going to go up to €1 billion in total. And it's going to be a huge amount of money that's going to be collected in relation to this. So all this money is being collected. Energy prices are rising. And the opposition is making the point that, look, you're also giving a subsidy for people who can't actually pay for these fossil fuels. And yet the government doesn't seem to be taking that much flack over it.
No, I mean, they do say it's legally binding and politically agreed. And I suppose if there was any deviation on that point, well, then that possibly would spark the end of the coalition. I mean, there is no way around that one. It would take such an effort to break up what has been agreed at that level under legislation. So I don't think it's something they're going to contemplate. They're hoping, though, that what you're seeing with the energy price rises will at some point in the next few months reduce, and also banking on the fact that those changes around the carbon tax when it comes to home heating products, that they don't take effect till May.
Sandra,
and just actually on that, from talking to Green Party TDs as well, they seem happy that they feel that this will be viewed as progressive because the money collected from the carbon tax, as we know, is kind of ring-fenced for those increases to the fuel allowance. They feel that they're going to get the nod from the ESRI, recognising it as progressive. And all of that means it's something that they're very comfortable with. And I suppose the other point is that the intention of the carbon tax is to change behaviour. So it is going to be punitive. It's supposed to hurt. And it's going to be felt. I suppose one of the things is that it's quite small when it comes to petrol and diesel, those increases that are coming in tonight. It's 128 or 148 for a full tank, depending on what you drive. So it's not going to be felt fully until next year, as Micheál mentioned, on things, other fuels like the home heating oil.
TDs, though, have been struck that prices were rising as they made their way up here today. The diesel prices were rising through the week and will rise again tonight. So I think there is an awareness of that. And I suppose there is an awareness, too, when it comes to the fuel allowance, that despite the increase of the fiver, despite the fact that more people will receive it, you still have a large chunk of people who are actually on welfare who don't qualify to get it. So if there is a cold winter and if things do escalate fairly dramatically, well, then you feel that some government intervention along the way, some emergency type payment mechanism like you see after floods and that, could be necessary.
Sandra, you were with Leo Varadkar this afternoon. Did he give you the impression that he felt he was a winner in the budget?
I think something that struck me as interesting, and I heard it both from Leo Varadkar, also from Michael McGrath and Pascal Donoghue in their interviews today, is when they're pushed on this question of the fact that these welfare increases and everything else, that they don't match the rise in inflation. They're not even keeping pace with that. And they completely acknowledge that. And what they're saying is, we know it's not quite enough. You have to take it in the round, but it does help. And they're completely acknowledging that they can't fix things in terms of the cost of living and the rising cost of living. And I think that's where they're going to be vulnerable. That's obviously where the opposition are focusing a lot of their attacks. And they're owning up to that. Did he look like he felt like a winner? I mean, I think he was happy to talk a lot about the business side of things because that's what where his department is at the moment. So the working from home changes. He mentioned the tax incentives to the gaming industry, even the cider, as you mentioned earlier, all that type of thing. So, and the wage subsidy scheme, when he was asked about the restaurants and the tourism industry being unhappy about the VAT rate going down from August next year, he pointed to the commercial rates waiver extension and the wage subsidy scheme staying in for longer. So, yeah, he seemed to be, you know, it's not an exciting budget. It's not something they can go out and say there's this one headline fantastic measure. It's just, I think, keeping it going and not getting into big trouble.
Micheál, do you think Taoiseach Micheál Martin is going to be happy with today?
Yeah, I think there's no mistakes. I mean, in sporting parlance, it's a scoreless draw. They move on. If there was a feeling in Fianna Fáil that there would be plaudits for the increases in the welfare rates and the core welfare rates that there hadn't been for 2 years, I don't think because of those reasons around inflation that's going to be forthcoming. There'll be none of that. But equally, there may not be any great pressure on the TDs when they make their way back to their constituencies.
Craft cider, gamers, people driving electric cars, these are the people who are benefiting. Do you know any of them?
Don't. No.
They're a bit niche. When you put the three together, you know, if you had a Venn diagram or something, it's going to be pretty niche to find that person who ticks all those
boxes. Leo Varadkar might find them. If there was one man who might find that person, it might be him.
Well, he was talking up the gamers, wasn't he?
He was, yes. That they're all talking about how they want Ireland to become a future hub for the gaming industry. This is one of these big things that the government is pushing for. They've obviously attracted a lot of big tech companies previously, and now maybe they're going to try and shift a bit. The gaming industry, of course, is huge. So, yeah, that's
something
they're interested
in. Isn't it?
They've
been looking to Scotland as an example
of really?
That. Yeah,
okay.
Apparently so,
yes.
Yeah.
Well, this is the whole thing, that basically Ireland's industrial policy often is looking at various areas, seeing where the big growth is going to be, and then trying to get some of that industry. And we've done that in a big way with the data centres, but that hasn't quite worked out, has it?
No, it's a very good idea once. And of course, there's a policy review on that being formed at the moment.
What does policy review mean? U-turn?
Reduction in the enthusiasm for
quietly.
Data centres.
Quietly. And one other big thing in this is actually the amount of money the government is borrowing. So it's going to be €50,000 per head of population. And they're going to reach €250 billion in terms of debt by 2025. But nobody is actually kicking up about this. The interesting thing about the way the political spectrum is set up in Dáil Éireann is that more or less all of the people in opposition actually are on the left of the political spectrum. So nobody is actually going to be criticising the government for continuing to borrow money.
Yeah, Pascal Donoghue, in the early part of his speech, giving the breakdown and pointing to some alarm bells that would sound even louder if interest rates were to rise considerably in the future around borrowing and the like. But then kind of coming back and talking about recovery and 400,000 extra jobs on the way over the next 2 years. But I thought it was notable that there was that nod and commitment in the early part of the speech to trying to deal with the debt. But as you say, from the opposition. But I mean, even at the height of the Celtic Tiger and the party across from the Fianna Fáil party at the time, Fine Gael was advocating further spending as well. And they did have that fiscal rectitude reputation even then, even though Charlie Flanagan and Michael Creed would say that reputation no longer applies.
Yeah, Pascal Donoghue, I suppose, you know, seemed very happy to bring the budget back into surplus a couple of years ago. I think it would have been one of his calling cards. It would have been nice to continue that. Then the pandemic happened. Enormous borrowing, a continued license to do that. Something he stressed today was that they had been aiming to stop borrowing for current spending, I think, in about 2 to 3 years' time. It's now coming in 1 year ahead of schedule due to the better outturn this year. So they're kind of happy with that. But if you look at the national debt, it's going to keep rising between now and 2025. The comparison the government is making is that they're saying, well, the economy is growing. So when you put it in, one versus the other, it's reasonable. We can pay it. It's sustainable. But we know that the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council has its sort of eye on them, saying they're at the limit of doing what's prudent. And the criticism that the council made was that they're not making choices. They're trying to do everything rather than focusing on one area and just saying we can't do everything.
Yeah, there was that reference, wasn't there, looking at it in the context of national income today. Is that a departure or a new way of looking at things?
Okay, so there are many different ways in which you can look at this. But one way in which you look at it is that you can measure the economy by way of national income, and that strips out all the leprechaun economic stuff. But having said that, you know, the size of an economy can go up and down. And really what you need to focus on is how much money have you borrowed? What happens if interest rates go up? And I think that's something perhaps where the government may find themselves in trouble in future years if there's a big jump in interest rates and if the economy begins to shrink. And we've seen that happen before and we've seen the effect of it all before.
But I suppose internationally too, the government is helped by the fact that there doesn't seem to be any great enthusiasm for addressing issues like this at the moment. That's not where things are at compared to the austerity times.
That's true. We're in a completely different type of scenario because we've got these zero interest rates. We've got quantitative easing. It's in vogue to be borrowing money the whole time. But, you know,
it's, since you're not comfortable with this.
I'm not comfortable with it. I don't like, it's kind of like gravity.
You seem very on edge there.
It's kind of like gravity. You know, you can jump up in the air and you might stay there a little longer than usual, but you're always going to come down to earth and sometimes with the bang. So are we entering the era of more boring budgets? Is this what we've got to get used to? What do you think, Micheál?
Yeah, potentially. I think so. But all it would take, I suppose, is a crisis along the financial lines like the past that would change and alter that all of a sudden. There was obviously a massive crisis with a financial impact. But when it came to things like reducing spending, that really isn't on the agenda yet. So as long as that continues, and that does allow all parties within government to work together as well. Sinn Féin even saying that the government were trolling them in their approach, but equally saying that they weren't trolling them correctly because they didn't deliver anything near what they needed to do in the budget.
Sandra, what do you think? Boring budgets, is this the way of the future?
Yes, I think so. It's that thing we've talked about, that they don't want a landmine. They don't want to be seen to give too much to one particular industry or sector. But I think they've been boring for a while. If you go back to the last few budgets of the previous government, it was about doing little tinkering in the tax bands and stuff like that. We just haven't had those big changes that really make a big difference to people's take-home pay or income for some time. So that seems to be the course for now.
Or a minister arriving in without telling even people in his own government that he was going to decentralize thousands of people all over the country on budget day.
Yeah, that was a big
different
surprise.
Times.
They were different times, big surprises. But big surprises don't always work, as we know from the past. If you kind of, people criticize the leaking, but the leaking works in the sense that the government gets a sense of what's going to fly and what's going to fall like a stone, don't they?
Yeah, I don't know anything about leaking.
You don't?
No, no. Just one of these. I have no views on it.
Yeah, I think as journalists, we're all a little conscious. We need to be careful about the, you know, any criticism of leaks. Something I think is interesting is some of the budget stuff that comes out really late. Is it hidden or was it late to be agreed? You know, one of the things was the public transport, cheaper public transport for young people. That came out overnight. You know, was that last to be agreed?
I don't think so.
You don't think so? No, no. It was just well hidden, was it? Yeah.
It was one of the final pieces of the jigsaw that was going to get a good reaction. So, you know, I suppose you could say it's to do with testing and it's to do with gauging public reaction. But equally, when the government were in a bind several times during the pandemic, you could see their approval ratings of the individual leaders going up when they had to make swift, decisive decisions. So while they won't perhaps lose much out of this budget, I mean, it isn't going to do anything, you feel, for opinion poll ratings within the government parties, if that is the aim. And that is the aim of all backbenchers who are always thinking about an election. Mm. And that's the other dynamic. I suppose what you did have in every election during the minority government, albeit justified or not, but there was always the question mark after every budget. Is this an election budget? Because there was always that potential of an election. That doesn't seem to apply at the moment.
Okay, Micheál Lehan, Sandra Hurley, we'll leave it there on Budget Night. Thanks very much for joining us on the Europolitics podcast. If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. And from me, David Murphy, have a very good evening.